From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of April, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Ishan Banu. He's with Kipler, located in Dubai, United Arab Emirates. We'll hear from the United States Department of Agriculture statisticians across the Midwest with their updates of the weekly crop progress reports. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll talk about the weather forecast too with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn settled today at $4.43 a bushel, up 3.25. July at 4.52.5, 2.75 higher. In December, 4.74.75, up 2.25. May soybeans today, 6.5 cents higher. Finished at $11.67.5. July 11.82, up 5.5 cents. In November, $11.74, 2.25 higher. Bean meal futures up 90 cents. The bean oil 27 cents higher. Wheat futures in the July, the soft red at 6.02.75, up 15.25, and the hard red July at 6.14.25, up 11.75 cents. Live cattle futures 90 cents lower for the day. Feeders were up 92.5, and lean hogs were $2.45 higher for 100 pounds. Crude oil, $1.50 higher at $83.41, and the wholesale price of gasoline today at $2.70.3, up 0.4 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 279 points higher at 17,645. Ishan Banu now joins us from Kipler, located in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates. Kipler, by the way, helps to model supply and demand for companies. It also evaluates commodity futures, equities, fixed income, and has some really granular real-time fundamentals that they base on hard sources that they monitor while they look for freight bottlenecks, and then they track vessels across the planet trying to optimize routing and logistics. Your job, Ishan, is to monitor agricultural commodities, including price. Can you tell me how you view the global marketplace at this point?
Grain prices are at their lowest in 3-4 years, and that is mainly because of a significant increase in supply in production out of Brazil for corn and soybeans and out of Russia for wheat. Demand increases have not happened as much as we saw in the last decade. So there are issues with demand and growth in China and in Asia in general. But overall, high prices over the last few years have really rationed demand and have discouraged the continuous increase in demand that we should have otherwise seen. So high prices did their job.
High prices have done their job. What is it in China particularly that has cause this issue, relatively speaking? Are they not growing their hog herd as quickly as they were? Is it disease there? Are there other issues there and other places across the planet?
In China, there are a couple of things. The lower import demand is not exactly translated into lower total demand, but total demand is lower. And domestic supply of grains within China and domestic stocks are better than they were. Very low demand through COVID allowed China to build stocks. And the last couple of years have been good for crop production, especially corn production in China. So with lower demand than before and with better domestic crops, China is then able to reduce its imports or depend less on imports this year than otherwise.
Has China put forth policies that encouraged the increase in production or hectares available to these crops, or is it technology, a combination of both, that have caused them to be able to increase some of their supply beyond just the couple of years of COVID that gave them a cushion?
There is a consistent increase in technology and yields, but that is there everywhere. In China specifically, growers are incentivized to grow more corn. Their price is supported during harvest season. And several other land use measures are there to help the farmer add more land to crop production. In terms of policy, it's a bit hazy, but for example, recently Chinese importers have been advised to reduce their imports and to limit their imports in certain ways. It's not always a very formal, clear public information, but we see that in cancellations of corn trades, corn purchases that China had done from Ukraine and elsewhere.
What other things have happened in other places across the planet limiting demand?
That's a good question. In North Africa, for example, there is a better rains have created a better crop this year. So this year's imports into North Africa, especially for wheat, should be lower than last year. India, which should have imported a lot of wheat, did not for the last 2 years, despite having low domestic production. And it has been eating into its stock, hoping for a good production year, hopefully this year. So I would say there are discrete events in most of these importing countries, but most of these decisions were made due to high prices and due to it being very expensive to import.
Do you see a time in the near future when demand will recover because of the low prices? That usually is the case.
Yes. So just to add to the previous one as well, demand hasn't gone down overall, and we see consistent import, global import expectations through the year. It's just that the huge increases in demand that mainly came out of China every year are absent, and the huge increases in supply that mainly came out of Brazil are present.
So I'm thinking about that. So if you're telling me that supply increase and China's demand China's overall import demand decreased?
China's overall import demand decreased during the trade war with the US in 2019-2020, and then it reached a low at the beginning of COVID. So if we take soybean imports as a proxy, China imported as much as 100 million tons of soybeans before the trade war. And then imports went to low 90s through the trade war and COVID. Since then, from the low 90s, we have increased soybean imports, which ended at 103 million tons last year. And we project them to exceed 106 million tons this year.
That's all imports from all countries for soybean.
That's okay. Right. And had we not had this break and continued on the same growth of demand, China could have been importing 115 million tons of soybeans if it weren't for COVID and the trade war in the recent years.
Geopolitically, will China return to the United States, or will it continue to look towards Brazil, in your opinion?
I think China will continue to work with Brazil and avoid the United States. It is already doing that where it can afford to. If we look at imports of corn into China, China has absolutely avoided buying US corn in recent months. So for corn and soybeans both, China jumped from, China sort of skipped the U.S. export season, which happens in the fourth quarter of the year, mainly because Brazilian supplies were very large and old crop Brazilian volumes were still available through Q4. And now we are in the next crop year of Brazil, and China is again continuing to buy Brazilian soybeans. But if we look at corn, this is historically, this is a perfect time for China to buy corn. Historically, China has always maintained, has affected a floor on corn prices in the world by swooping in and buying a large amount of corn wherever prices hit these lows. And that's what a lot of traders also expected when corn prices went below $5. But it's not this phenomenon is not being seen this year. And two things are happening. Chinese corn imports are lower, and it is only importing from Brazil. China is behaving as if the trade war is already on.
Why does it expect a trade war to be on?
We would be guessing here, but it is difficult to say that there is no geopolitics involved. There is geopolitics involved, and it is a conscious decision not to buy U.S. corn.
It has to do with U.S. presidential race?
Very likely, yes. They have their own reasons, of course, like we visited earlier. They have a better domestic supply. They have lower total demand. So it allows them to play this card this year. They are also more confident in continuing supplies out of Brazil. So they can afford to, looking at everything they can afford to for corn, less so for soybeans.
How much of an impact does the Russo-Ukraine war have on China's decisions?
That's a difficult one. China has not clearly shown its favor towards Russia in this war, and it doesn't. It's not easy to see that in flows or trading decisions as well, directly. Because if we look at it, China is also supporting Ukraine by buying a lot of Ukrainian corn.
Let's turn to one other item before I let you go. This one back to the soybean market, maybe some corn and wheat as well. What impact geopolitically do decisions that the Argentine government has and are likely to make in the future have on both domestic and global markets there?
So there's a ideological mismatch here, where in Argentina, ideologically, if we look at the policies, it should be all free market and dollarized economies. However, because export duties are a major source of income for the government, it's very difficult to let go of them, even though it agrees with the ideology. So, we had initially expected that the government would try to reduce export duties and create a more free market, especially for the farmers. That is unlikely to happen in the near term because the government is struggling for sources of income. We think that it would be more of a status quo in terms of export duties. However, just by acknowledging the fact that there's a parallel currency market and bringing official currency rates closer to the parallel market, the farmer is getting much better income than he did before. So in terms of unlocking exports out of Argentina, it will be better than previous years, but the Argentine farmer still will continue to hold on to his beans as a dollar hedge, and that behavior will not significantly change.
Ishan Bano is the lead agricultural commodities analyst for Kepler. That's at KPLER.com, Kepler.com online. He's located in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows that 12% of the corn crop around the nation has been planted, 10% is the rolling five-year average, 3% of that crop is up and growing, 8% of the soybeans have now been sown, 4% is the rolling five-year average. 17% of the winter wheat crop is headed. The five-year average is 13%, and the condition of that crop is 43% good, 7% excellent, for a total of 50%. That's down 1 percentage point from the previous week. Now, here are the state statisticians with updates from their regions across the Midwest.
This is Melissa Couch, agricultural statistician for the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office. Although the week began with above normal temperatures, multiple storm systems brought cooler temperatures and much needed rain, which only allowed Iowa farmers 3.0 days suitable for field work during the week ending April 21, 2024. Corn, soybean, and oat planting continued this week when field conditions allowed. Topsoil moisture condition rated 10% very short, 27% short, 60% adequate, and 3% surplus. Corn planted reached 13% complete, 3 days ahead of last year and the five-year average. 8% of the expected soybean crop has been planted, 4 days ahead of last year and 6 days ahead of the average. 78% of the expected oat crop has been planted, 1 week ahead of last year and 8 days ahead of the five-year average. 34% of the oat crop has emerged, 10 days ahead of last year. Pastures and hay ground continue to green up due to much-needed rain. No reports of cattle turned out onto pasture yet. For the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office, this is Melissa Couch.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois, with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Warm weather continued across Illinois last week, and temperatures averaged 56.9 degrees. That was 2.4 degrees above normal for the prairie state this time of year. The average rainfall across the state was 0.95 inches, and that is right on the average. But rainfall amounts were varied across Illinois. Southern and western areas generally had rainfall totals that were above average. There were 3.5 days suitable for field work around the state last week, and topsoil moisture increased to 5% short, 79% adequate, and 16% surplus. Corn planting advanced to 11% finished compared to 16% 1 year ago and 10% normally. 1% of corn acres have emerged. Soybean planting also reached 11% finished. That compares to 12% last year and 6% for the five-year average. The Illinois winter wheat crop was 11% headed, compared with 6% 1 year ago and 5% for the five-year average. The condition of the crop improved from 1 week ago and was rated 4% very poor to poor, 13% fair, and 83% good to excellent. That is better than 1 year ago. Pasture conditions also improved from last week and were rated 7% very poor to poor, 23% fair, and 70% good to excellent. That is worse than 1 year ago. Finally, soil temperatures ranged from the low 40s in northern Illinois to the low 50s in southern Illinois. One more thing, please watch out for big equipment on small rural roads. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
For the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus. Rain across much of Minnesota resulted in 3.0 days suitable for field work during the week. Field work included tillage and planting of small grains, row crops, and sugar beets. Livestock were doing well with no issues reported. Topsoil moisture supplies rated 8% very short, 22% short, 61% adequate, and 9% surplus. Corn planted was at 8% complete. That's 9 days ahead of last year and 2 days ahead of the five-year average. Soybeans planted reached 5%. That's 11 days ahead of last year and 1 week ahead of the five-year average. Barley planted was at 12%, with the crop beginning to emerge at 1%. Oats planted was at 29% complete, with 10% of the crop emerged. And spring wheat planted was 18%, with 2% of the crop emerged. Sugar beet planted reached 29%. For the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the nation. Don Day of Day Weather now joins us to take a look at the forecast for the Corn Belt across the United States, a few other places here as well. Hi, Don. Thank you so much for being with us. First, we're gray and rainy here. What are conditions like where you are?
Well, it was gray and rainy. Now it's sunny and warm, but it's going to get gray and rainy later. So everyone's going to kind of get into the gray and rainy. A lot of places will across the lower 48, especially the Corn Belt as we head into the next week.
Tell me about it, please.
Well, we have a series of systems coming off the North Pacific and coming through the West. And then what they're doing is they're pushing out warmer, moist air ahead of these systems. And what will happen is you'll get a trend towards warmer temperatures. That will help spawn some instability. You're going to get rain and some showers and thunderstorms, and then you're going to cool off behind these systems, go through, and then it's rinse, recycle, and repeat. You're just going to see the same pattern over the next 2 or 3 weeks, to where this will keep the frequency of rain in the forecast about every 2 to 4 days. In between, you'll have some dry weather, but overall, it's a wet-looking forecast for a lot of the Midwest, almost all of the Corn Belt, the Northern Plains. We're still looking at some of those hard red winter wheat areas, though, kind of missing out on this.
Every 2 to 4 days for a system seems fairly often.
Well, yeah, these Pacific systems are lined up, and the spacing between them is about the same. I mean, you're going to maybe get some days that are going to be a little bit longer, but what we have is a rather, I'd call it a stagnant pattern that'll just be repeating itself well into early May. So the pattern we have now and what we've had for the last week or so is basically going to continue in a cycle form.
I know this is very general, but how much rainfall might you see in any given area with one of these systems?
Well, if we were to cumulatively add everything together, the Corn Belt is looking at anywhere from about 2 to 4 inches of rainfall. That would occur over the next 7 to 8 days. We would probably see similar amounts like in that range probably for the next 7 days after that. So it's going to be persistently wet, and any breaks we have are going to be short-lived.
Are the Delta area states getting as much rain?
Arkansas certainly will be, and that will expand into northeast Texas, eastern Oklahoma. The further east you go, into Kentucky and Tennessee and into those areas and points east, it will be drier. In fact, there is a drier trend developing for the southeastern United States. Right now, it's right down the middle of the U.S. It has the most active weather, and that's what we expect to continue.
Early on, you mentioned in our conversation that things were dry in the hard red winter wheat growing regions. Are they going to stay that way?
Well, the eastern areas, the eastern panhandle of Texas, some central western areas of Oklahoma and central and eastern Kansas are going to catch some of this rain. But as you get into portions of western and southwestern Kansas, parts of southeastern Colorado, the panhandles, there is some opportunities for rain. But it's not going to be the widespread, good, soaking spring rains that they're looking for. That will, again, stay just north and east of those areas. So that is an area of concern as we're entering in another week here where those areas are missing out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. Just click and play from the website willag.org or search out the Closing Market Report in your favorite podcast applications. Places like Apple Podcast and Spotify, along with Amazon Music and Audible, TuneIn, as well as many others, and your favorite podcast application, whatever that might be. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.